All right, guys. So today we have a really kind of fun new adventure that we're embarking on for the OT for Life podcast. And I have Rochelle and Maya with me. So they are both first-year students, and they just finished all of their classes. And they're going on, they're going to have a week off, and then they're going to start their first of the level two fieldwork experiences that they have. Rochelle is actually going to be at an adult rehab with a focus in neuro, and Maya is going to be at a pediatric clinic over the summer. And I guess I should explain a little bit more about what's going to happen. Basically, we are going to be kind of touching base over the next 3 months as they go through this experience and really just kind of getting a snapshot of what it is to go from being a student to being a clinician, hearing about their stories, anything that might be challenging, anything that's super fun, and really kind of just hearing about their experience as they go through it. So I'm really looking forward to this. If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life. So, how do you guys feel right at this moment?
Well, we're no longer first years, now we're second years. Officially, we're like, we've gone over the hump. So, I'm excited about that. I'm very nervous to be going into my level two. So I'm halfway like excited and halfway like super nervous.
I would say that I feel the same way. I think part of me is super excited to go out there and do it after, you know, a year of just learning theory and what you're supposed to do. And then the other half is kind of nervous that I might not know it all or know all the answers right away. Which is, of course, expected, but...
Right, and I think also just preparing for not knowing what's going to be there, it's like, oh, okay, all right, I'm just going to roll with it and see what I get exposed to.
Yeah.
So at this moment, how prepared do you guys feel like you are going into your first level two? You've already had two level one experiences, but not a level two yet.
I can go first. I'm Rochelle, by the way. I would say that I feel most prepared in talking with patients and conversing with them. I've gotten a lot of experience with that throughout my level one field work. You get to interact with the patients on a daily basis. You get to hear, you know, what their concerns are, what the benefits are from having OT. But I would say that the ways that I don't feel necessarily prepared are interventions themselves. I know that a lot of times in class you talk about kind of what the diagnoses are and kind of how they present, and then they give you ideas of what you can do for occupational therapy, but you don't really get to see what that looks like or what some of the challenges are that come with that. So that's kind of what I feel least prepared about. So I know that I can study this is what a spinal cord injury is, and these are the different levels, and this is the musculature that will be present or not, or et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think I'll be able to kind of grasp the full what are you going to do.
I think that's great. And honestly, until you actually have a client sitting in front of you that's like, hey, these are my occupations that I can't do anymore, how are you going to help me? You can think about it, you know, you can kind of have these ideas of what you're going to do. But until you're actually like, hey, George, this is what you want to get back to, and how am I best going to help you with that?
Exactly.
Yeah. And so I'm Maya, by the way. I feel very prepared in intervention. So I feel in my level one pediatric fieldwork setting, I got to do a lot of hands-on treatment, and like my best friend was Pinterest. I loved Pinterest, and I had a lot of fun doing that and coming up with activities and just figuring out what the children really loved, and then kind of fine-tuning the activity to like if they love like trains and make it more about trains. And so I feel really confident and prepared to actually treat. What I don't feel prepared to do is note writing. I do not feel prepared to write a note. That's one thing that I've been working on, and I feel like it can improve a lot.
I definitely agree. I don't think that I'm quite there with the notes or documentation yet.
Do you guys feel like your level of preparedness, I'm looking at you, Maya, because I feel like you had a pediatric setting and your level two, it might be somewhat similar. And so do you feel like that you might be more prepared? As Rochelle, you might feel like, because your level one in adult rehab was a different setting than what you're going to be doing over the summer. Do you feel like that factors in?
Yeah, it definitely factors in because I feel a little bit more confident about going in and doing it. Like, okay, I kind of know a lot of just like toys that are available. And so I feel very prepared to go in and just treat and have fun with the kids. So
yes, I feel that if I had my level one in an outpatient neuro type of setting, I would feel a lot more prepared. This last semester for my level one, I was placed in a hand clinic. So I think that if I were to have been placed for level two in hands, I would have felt a lot more confident just because I got to see that week by week. You get to kind of know what the typical diagnoses are that come in. You see a common trends with challenges. For example, tons of people that come into hand clinics, it's from typing or sitting at their desk all day long. So you kind of get accustomed to what their common challenges are. And treatment activity, you just get to see more ideas as well.
So what would you guys say that you're most excited about?
I am so excited to work with kids. My background is working with kids. I was a TA for 3 years. I currently still babysit all the time. It's like great money for a grad school student. So I just am excited to work with kids. I feel like I really have a passion for working with kids and just like a natural talent. And so I'm really excited just to go in and have fun.
That sounds awesome. I'm really excited to just go out there and do it. I've kind of been getting a little restless just sitting in class all year. Yeah, just sitting down, you know, 3 hour class in the morning, in the afternoon, driving back and forth. I'm just really excited to go out there and do it and be moving around and making a difference in people's lives and helping them. So I think that's going to be what I'm most excited about.
Yeah, I think, and speaking from my own experience as a student too, it was always hard just sitting for 3 hour, 4 hour classes and just trying to be a sponge and taking it all in, where I feel like most people come into this profession wanting to be hands-on and wanting to be doing and really sitting for a long period of time is very difficult. So I totally get that. Totally understand, because I was definitely in the same shoes.
I'm also really excited to learn and to get better. I like to like know what I'm doing, so that's what I'm excited for, is to get to that point where I'm like, okay, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I really agree with that. When you're in level one, you're kind of expected to watch, or they kind of tell you do this and they're watching you do the one thing the whole time, versus this summer we'll get to be a lot more creative and come up with more things on our own and get to do kind of like a trial and error process of what works, what doesn't. And you kind of get to, level up, I guess.
So outside of kind of the things you guys mentioned about documentation and intervention, is there anything else that you are nervous about as you are embarking on this? It's a big deal, you know? There's a lot of learning, there's a lot of growth, there's a lot of stuff that's happening within these next 12 weeks.
Yeah, I'm really nervous about working with the parents, because I know in pediatrics, the family is also the client. And I was a TA for kindergarten for a few years, like I mentioned earlier, but have never been working in occupational therapy with parents. So I think it might be a little bit different because of just of the ability levels of the children vary. So I think that's what I'm nervous about.
And it's not even just having to work with the kid, develop rapport with the kid and try to get them from where they are to where, you know, where they can be and where you want them to be, but then also learning to interact with the parent and understanding where they're coming from and kind of going through, like, some parents might be coping, you know, some parents might be on the other end of that, but really kind of meeting them where they're at, also seeing where the kid's at. And then you're going to use your therapeutic lens and say, all right, here we go. Like, how am I going to attempt to get everybody where I think they should be and where everybody else wants to be too? So being in the pediatric realm right now, that's definitely something that I face on a daily basis.
Yeah. How do you find that you maneuver around that and negotiate around that if you have trouble with parents, or how does that work for you?
Every case is going to be different. And I think having more time, having more exposure, dealing with lots of different people and dealing with these situations is helpful. Being able to kind of like share a story of like, yes, like I went through something similar with somebody else, or like, you know, even if it's like a family member or something, you know, where you can kind of personally connect with that family. And it's like, you know what? I hear you. I might not understand, because, you know, we might be coming from different backgrounds, different cultures, whatever it is. I hear what you're saying. This is what I'm seeing with your kid. And let's work together so we can reach a common ground and really get that kid to progress as far as they potentially can.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
What I'm most nervous about is a little bit different. This summer, I'll be working with a lot of people who have had spinal cord injuries, traumatic brain injuries, stroke, Parkinson's disease. And I think that it's just going to be a very different feeling towards the patients versus when I was in hand therapy this last semester, a lot of people, you know, had broken a bone or maybe they had, you know, a tendon repair. And it was all kind of things that they knew they were going to get better. And they would get frustrated when things weren't moving as quickly as they liked, but they always had that end goal of they knew it was going to get better versus spinal cord injuries tend to be pretty permanent. And so I think that it's going to be kind of I don't want to say sad, but I think it's going to weigh a little bit down on me. And I'm just interested to see how that will go. That's kind of what I'm most nervous about, mm-hmm. kind of what the interaction will be and just the vibe that kind of goes. I'm sure that we'll have great times where we'll make a lot of accomplishments and everything will go maybe well one session, but I'm kind of worried for those sessions that maybe don't go so well or having those hard conversations with people about this is kind of permanent and this is kind of what you have to deal with.
You know, I think one of the topics that really pops up a lot, and I'm sure you guys have talked about it in school and even out in the field, I hear it all the time of really what is, having self-care for you as the clinician, mm-hmm. you know, because we are dealing with potentially very difficult situations, you know, whether it is a kid and you're working with the family, or it's a young adult that suffered a spinal cord injury, or an older adult where now maybe they have dementia and you're dealing with their caregiver, you know, their husband, mm-hmm. their spouse or anything like that. And so really, I think having some idea of like different self-care activities that you guys can do for yourselves as you're going through this difficult process, because you won't know exactly what you're going to get exposed to until you're like, bam, like there's a wall and you're right there and you're like, all right. And now what? How am I going to get past that? Do you have anything that you've thought of that you might be able to do to help yourself kind of get through this?
I'm not sure. I mean, I know that I'll have to be driving to and from, so I'm kind of hoping maybe I could download some sort of podcast or some sort of comedy, something, you know what I mean? Something to kind of get your mind off something that's so kind of weighing down on you. But mm-hmm. I'm not totally positive yet. I'm going to try to get back into working out again. So hopefully that will help kind of release stress and, you know, make you feel a little better after a long, hard day. But I know that every day will be different. And at the hand clinic that I was at, there were some cases where, you know, people kind of had some other psychosocial issues of adjusting when things weren't going as quickly as they liked. And it wasn't as frequent, and I could be totally off and it might not even be that frequent. Maybe people that are going to be at this clinic that I'm seeing are going mm-hmm. to, you know, be much more adjusted and they're not going to be in that stage of my life just got flipped upside down.
Yeah, I mean, I'll share a story with you guys. When I was a student, this was my first level 2, and I experienced 2 patients that died within like a couple weeks of each other. And the first one happened, and I remember looking at my supervisor, and she could totally tell, like I had the big eyes, like, what in the world is going on? I was not expecting this. And then like a week or two later, the same thing happened. And she was just like, this never happens, you know? And here she's like trying to be there to support me. And I'm like, oh, wait, like what's going on? I, is this the right profession? I don't know. I wasn't expecting this. So yeah, I mean, you honestly never know.
Yeah.
Just kind of be prepared to keep yourself going and definitely reach out if you need support.
Yeah, I know what always works for me when I'm having like a tough day just in general, I love to kind of sit alone and just have like quiet time. Like, so sometimes like even on my lunch for like level 1, if it was a rough day, I would just sit in the car and just like sit in silence and kind of just have that moment to myself to think about what happened and just kind of like give myself a little pep talk like, okay, you got this. It's okay. In addition to that, I love to go to the beach. I love to just sit at the beach and watch the waves. It's like the best thing to do in general, whether you're having a good day or bad. Okay, just do it.
Yeah. I like that.
I like that too.
I think too, I just heard it somewhere. Everyone always talks about sunsets, but nobody ever talks about like sunrises.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, I really should start waking up earlier so I can go watch some sunrises.
Yeah.
Start the day off right.
Yeah.
Not just end it on a
yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
That's great.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Gotta get up early for that.
Yeah. I'm trying. I've started to try to start waking up a little bit earlier these days. Usually I'm like a 6 o'clock or after, and just the past couple days I've been doing a 5:30. 5. We'll see.
You can do it.
Stay tuned.
I know, right? We'll be following my waking up over the summer, too. We'll see if I actually stick to that. So what do you guys think your strengths are at this moment?
I think my strengths kind of relate to what I'm more excited about. I think that, or what I am feeling more comfortable with, such as building rapport, talking to patients. I feel like that's my strength just because that's kind of what I got to do in level one. You kind of have to take a seat, sit back, watch the therapist do the treatment, but you can still have those interactions with people and talk to them and get their stories, get their kind of occupational history, stuff like that. I think that is kind of one of my strengths, and I know that I'll try to use that throughout my whole level two. And I think going along with that, my other strength would be, I think I'm pretty good at reading people, so I think that that will help with all of the communication aspects of level two fieldwork.
I think kind of both of those things tie in together.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, being able to interact, being able to communicate, but then also being able to read signals and then being able to adjust.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're still going to have to go in and push, even when you're like, they're telling me no, even if they're not even verbally telling
me.
Like, their body is saying, get out of my room here, or, you know, whatever.
Exactly, yeah. And then on the flip side, I think my weakness would be kind of, which I'm guessing is the next question.
Jumping ahead here, overachiever.
And then I think the flip side of that, my weakness would be kind of those technical skills that come along with treating patients. So
yeah, you're not expected to have
exactly
a lot of that yet. You know, you have the gist of it, but it will happen. This will be a very different tune when we reconvene at the end here.
Exactly.
So I think my strength is building rapport with children. I'm like a big kid at heart, so I love to play. So my strength with kids is just like playing with them and like building that relationship and figuring out what do they like, because let's do that. And so on the flip side, my weakness might be like, when do I cut off the play? And now let's like get to work. I know that a lot of the times they go hand in hand, but sometimes it's like, okay, we're done. Let's get to work. And also too, I think that when you become like a kid's friend, they may not take you that serious. And so I want to make it like clear cut that I still am the adult, even though we just were like jumping and playing and twirling. So I think that's kind of like my weakness. How do I get them to kind of like respect me when it's time to respect me?
Right. Mm-hmm. But again, that's going to be something that you are going to learn as throughout your experience. And honestly, the best pediatric therapist is going to be working and it's going to look like play, you know?
Yeah.
And so in your mind, you're working and that kid is working hard. But to everybody else looking around, they're like, they're just playing right now.
Having fun, yeah.
But it's definitely kind of a fine line of really like developing that trust and that respect and keeping it fun, but then also like laying down the hammer, like I'm not putting up with that right now.
So do you find it's best to be more proactive with that, or is that something that's more reactive if a situation comes up and you're like, we need to cut it?
I think that's a fantastic question. And for me, I'm really big about setting boundaries and expectations up front. So typically when I start working with a child, I'm not really doing too much like therapy right in that first couple sessions, maybe the first month. It's really like just, this is me. You're going to learn who I am. I'm going to bring out some toys. I'm going to bring out some activities. But it's a lot of these kind of like social communications of understanding, you know, a lot of the kiddos might not have language or they have delays in language. So getting them to feel like they have a voice, but then also saying like, this is what's going to happen.
Okay.
So a lot of what I'm doing in the very beginning is kind of setting the expectations. So then when I do get to something hard, the kiddo's like, oh, I know I can ask for help. Or I know I can tell them I'm all done. I know if I say this, I'm going to get this, rather than just completely losing it and crying and screaming and tantruming, which is a lot of what happens in the beginning. So I think to answer your question, I set the premise when we're not doing very challenging things. So then when we are, they can look to me for trust and for respect of like, she's going to help me get through this. She's not just being really hard on me.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's a really good answer.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Is there anything that you guys have done or that you potentially will do? Because you have, about a week and a half now before you start. So anything that you've done or that you will do to prepare yourself before starting your first day?
My site, they gave us kind of a list of our objectives for the whole level two fieldwork experience. They gave us kind of what you're going to be seeing in orientation. They even gave us a list of what assessments we need to be familiar with and kind of the nitty gritty of what details of different diagnoses we're going to see. So I am placed with another student. So she and I plan to get together tomorrow, actually, and we want to go over kind of everything we remember from the coursework or look up anything that we might need to in preparation. But yeah, it was really nice. They laid it out for us and they said, this is what will be expected of you on day one. And as the weeks progress, this is how we're going to add on a little bit more each week.
Just for clarification, is it going to be two students to one supervisor, at least as far as you know at this point?
Yes. Two students for one supervisor.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what are your thoughts about going into a situation like that? We call it the collaborative model. just curious as a student, yeah, what your take is.
I'm really excited. I think that it'll be super nice to have another student to kind of go through the experience with and to bounce ideas off of and to kind of split up or read each other's notes over, since I know we'll be assigned some of the documentation aspects. When I did a level one, I was by myself and I really liked that. But I think you get a little bit more out of it when there's another student there and you can kind of get feedback from somebody that's kind of on the same level as you and also going through mm-hmm. the same experience. And I know the person that I'll be with and she's really on top of it. So I know that she'll be a great partner to have.
So I had the opposite. I have the opposite. So in my level one pediatric experience, I had a classmate with me and I was extremely grateful to be with him because we would bounce ideas off of each other. And I feel like that really worked for me and that really helped me learn. And so this time I'll be by myself. And so I know once I get to week 11, I'll have a full caseload, which I'm really, and I'll be by myself. So I guess I won't necessarily have someone to bounce ideas off of. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll force me to really, like, it'll push me, but it also kind of makes me a little bit scared right now.
Are there going to be other students at your site?
Yeah.
That you know of? Okay.
I don't know them. They're from other schools.
Oh, uh-huh. Interesting.
That'll be interesting. Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. There'll be other students at my site as well with the PTs. Okay. So there'll be other PT students. I think there could be up to six. I'm not sure.
Oh, wow.
There's six PT at the clinic. There's multiple PTs and just one OT. So okay, we'll see how it goes. I'm excited. I think it'll be a great opportunity to kind of learn more about the PT side of things, just because you don't always spend a lot of class time on that, and getting to see firsthand what they do, mm-hmm. get to advocate for OT and tell them what we do, and then also work together and kind of even an even better job. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's great. I think that's really something that needs to be stressed more in our profession, but even mm-hmm. just in kind of rehab and in the helping profession in general, medical profession, especially. I really am kind of by myself. I have to actually make the effort to collaborate with mm-hmm. the PTs, collaborate with the caseworkers. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always, yeah, like, yes, we need this more. It's so beneficial. It's so great to be able to tackle a case with somebody that has a similar mindset of like wanting to help, but they're going to mm-hmm. come at it from a slightly different lens or a mm-hmm. slightly different angle. So I think that's fantastic, yeah, that you're going to get that. And Maya, you'll probably be getting some interprofessional type stuff as well, right?
Yeah, from what I know, I will. I know that my site has speech, they have PT and OT, but so I don't know exactly what I'll be doing. I know I'll be shadowing the OT, of course, but I'm not really sure how much time I'll spend with them. We'll see. But I am excited. If I do get to work with them, I'm super excited to kind of see what they do and what I can bring to the table as well.
I have two things I want to touch on, on like things you guys said, but specifically in the first couple weeks, hopefully throughout the whole time, but specifically in the first couple weeks when you guys have downtime, really seek out if you can. Mm-hmm. You know, and if it's allowed and if it's appropriate, seek out going and observing the PT or speech or whoever else okay. that you can. Because I think that in the beginning, you should have a little bit more time. That's when you can really kind of dive in and see what they're doing and all of that. If you could do it at the end, great.
If we have time.
Yeah, right. And then the other thing, I'm jumping back to the 2-to-1 and the collaborative model. Do you foresee any, I don't know if issues is the right thing, but anything that you might have to overcome, being that there are two students and one mm-hmm. supervisor?
Yeah, I think the first thing that maybe comes to mind would be comparing the two students. Like, there's there's certainly going to be times where the other student is doing a better job than I am, or vice versa, or this student gets along much better with the client, but I'm the one that has to treat them today. I could see something like that going on for sure. Other than that, I don't know. I think there's more benefits than there are negatives.
And I feel like that's a very kind of life thing that you just said right there. You know, even as a clinician, that could happen where you might have an aide that's with you, or maybe a nurse, or somebody else that connects better with that client. But you're like, all right, we still got to make it work.
Exactly, yeah.
But I know from what I experienced last summer by having two students that the differences within maybe the first maybe month, maybe 6 weeks can be very vast. But what I loved seeing by having two students is that the weaknesses in one became the strengths of them. And vice versa. Mm-hmm. And they, by the end, they were brilliant and they were emulating each other in the strongest points around. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you didn't have another student, you might not be able to see that growth and see, because you're always looking at another clinician.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a question. Yeah. So when you have two students, do you feel that at times the one student that maybe is doing a little bit better kind of either helps them, kind of pulls the other one up toward to their level, you know what I'm saying? Kind of gives them a model, something to achieve for, versus if you have a student on their own, it's kind of just up to them and that's, or do you feel like they get stuck maybe? Versus if you have two students, do you feel like they kind of overcome their weaknesses better or more easily?
That's a tough question to answer. I feel like it's easier for the students to connect and understand each other because specifically if they're starting at the same level, they're the same year in school, like there might be other factors that would play into that, or a different program, you know, then maybe one program was very heavy into adult rehab and one of them, you know, the other one is more into psychosocial, you know, and mental health. So there could be significant differences in that. But I feel like when you're with a student that you guys are basically going through it together, it's much more facilitated. I don't want to say easy. It's much more facilitated and having that growth happen. Whereas if you are trying to emulate a therapist that's been practicing for 10, 20, or 30 years, you're always like, oh, I'm never as good as them because they've been practicing for so long. So whether it's easier or harder, I think it's just different.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe, Amaya, you can kind of explain, you know, share kind of what you went through with that as well.
Yeah. Like there were some days where my classmate would do like an activity or like a, like maybe the last 20 minutes of the session, he would do the treatment. And I could see that he was like struggling a little bit. I would always jump in and like just help out wherever he needed. And like we had a great time because he would like step to the side of like, thank you so much. I didn't even notice that that was going on, or I didn't even see that their feet weren't on the floor. And so they were struggling to even maintain their upright balance. So just little things like that. We would just kind of like help each other out. So now the next time he does his part of the session, he knows to keep in mind the things that I could see from as an outsider. So we helped each other out in a lot of ways. Yeah.
I think that's huge. Being a student and specifically in the beginning, towards week 8, 9, 10, you guys are going to be just fine. But really in that beginning, when you're trying to build rapport and you're trying to come up with an activity and you're trying to execute the activity and you're trying to do this and you're looking out for safety and you're collaborating with the caregiver or whoever else is around, like there's so many things that are happening that it's very easy to forget or just not attend to something that you should be attending to. And it could be something as simple as like a cord on the ground or a shoe that's in the way or a toy that's in the way, whatever it is. And so, yeah, by having somebody who is watching and kind of carrying out the session, but then also having somebody that's there that's like, hey, you know what? You could do this better. Or on the opposite of like, I loved how you did that and I want to do that the next time too. So it's not just pointing out the bad in you, but also highlighting like, I love that how you did that.
Yeah. There was sometimes that he would like come in and say, hey, I have this song that I'm going to sing with this kid because we know that he loves like the color red, and he would do that and the kid would just like come to life and like immediately join the session and be so involved. So even stuff like that, I would be like, oh my God, I need to start learning songs.
So do you guys have any questions? I know you've kind of already been asking a couple, but do you guys have any questions for me, either as a fieldwork educator, a clinician, or a previous student?
Yeah, I want to know how you prepared for especially your first level two and what kind of worked for you and what didn't necessarily work for you.
Fantastic question.
Thank you.
So I didn't have much time to prepare because my first level two, I was actually placed at a different facility. And I found out it was like a week or two before I started. I was actually switched to a completely different setting. So I was supposed to be in a skilled nursing facility. And then they switched me to I was at a hospital and I was doing inpatient, outpatient neuro, and hand. And I learned about that. Basically, very little time to prepare. And I also had never been introduced to anything within like the adult realm. Back when I went through the program, we got to pick all of our field works. And so I did 3 of my 4 in pediatrics. And then this was my first one that I was like, all right, I'm going to push myself. I don't know what I'm getting myself into. So yeah, I can't say that I really prepared all that well because I honestly, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. and it was really hard. I mean, being that it was adults and being that I had 3 different kind of practice areas and I would go from one to the other all in one day. Oh, wow. And I'd be doing evals and treatments in all of them in one day. Ooh. It was a lot.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, I can't say that I prepared well going into it, but I really think that it taught me a lot afterwards.
Okay.
And how to kind of deal with challenges and deal with really kind of getting pushed out of your comfort zone. So I like to tell my students that come to me now, if you need more support, if you need more supervision, more time to debrief, anything like that, let your supervisor know. And be like, hey, I want to have a meeting every Friday or every Monday morning, or I need it 3 times a week, because if that's what you need to help yourself get through it, and as long as they can fit it into the schedule, but to really kind of advocate for themselves and say, like, this is what's going to help me in that situation. So I think that's really important.
That's such a good question.
Thank you. The other thing I'd say is really be present, regardless if you're tired, you had a long drive, maybe you're completely overwhelmed with something that's going on, whether it is the client, whether it's noises or light or anything like that. Try to be present. Ask a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. Really just kind of throw yourself out there. Just kind of be ready for anything. I think a lot of times some tensions can happen between supervisors and students when the supervisors don't think the students are engaged. And I say don't think. I'm not saying that they aren't, but the supervisors don't think that they are. Or maybe they like the student likes to think about things a lot before they actually act on it. So really communicating with your supervisor how you operate. So it's like, you're gonna ask me questions and I'm not going to have an answer right away. Like, I need a minute. And so in the beginning, if you don't tell them that, they're going to be like, come on, you know, like, let's get going, answer my question. But if you're upfront of like, this is how I operate, sometimes I need time to myself, you know, I need some quiet time, then they start to understand, okay, she's here, he's here, but they need their time to kind of figure that out too. So I think having that kind of open line of communication of how you operate as a person is extremely beneficial going into it too.
Okay.
You kind of answered my question. I was going to ask if you had any advice for your first level too, or things that you kind of look out for, or things that kind of put up red flags for you when you meet your level two students or get to know them on their first days. Maybe something that's been really great that really stood out to you, or something that was really poor and didn't go so well. It doesn't have to be specific, but just general. I don't know.
Again, like being present, getting out there and just doing. Not being afraid to just, hey, like, you need help with that? Hey, let me get this for you. Can I start doing notes? Can I start doing this? Like, what can I help with? And really just trying to, like, jump into the situation.
It sounds like just kind of being excited and ready to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to be nervous. Everyone's nervous. But don't let your nerves get the best of you. One thing that I will say as far as maybe a potential red flag would be, specifically in all throughout, but really in the beginning, one of the big things that you guys can do is safety awareness and really that's paying good. Attention to that from the get-go. And trying to, even if you aren't the one like leading the session or anything like that, but trying to pinpoint when the clinician is actually removing something, changing something about the environment to address that safety component. Because like what you said, Maya, about kind of being that outsider in the beginning, being the observer, you can pick up on a lot more things too. And I think that's definitely one of the big things that you guys are graded on. And so trying to figure out those things right from the beginning, I think are really important.
Okay.
No, that's great advice. That's great. Not necessarily the first thing you would think about. And you watch people do things, but they're so in their element that it's not, you know that they're not sitting there, okay, I need to sit here. Okay, I need to use the gait belt. And you know what I'm saying? They just do it and it's their natural thing. So picking up on those little safety things that you might not have thought about or spend a ton of time on in class. That's good advice.
Yeah. And I think too, just taking the time again, if it's appropriate within the setting, to connect with the clients and with the patients. You know, and it, as long as your supervisor and the setting is cool with you kind of jumping in, like, yeah, just chatting, you know, and really kind of getting to know them. I know when I was a student, we had this one lady, she was super sweet. She was a Spanish speaker. And at that point, I still don't know much Spanish, but at that point I knew less, but nobody really kind of took the time to connect with her. They just saw her for her diagnosis and was like, you know, do this, do that. Okay, great. And like send her on her way. And I, because I had the time, would just kind of sit down and try to connect with her on a different level. And I think I was able to kind of get a little bit more buy-in to the therapy. And I think she actually started to enjoy coming a little bit more just because I took a little bit of extra time to connect with her.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think that's something OTs do really well.
Right. Yeah, I think so too.
So how do you feel right now?
I feel less nervous than I did before. And I know, and I'm excited because I know that this kind of, these little talks every 2 weeks are really going to help me process it and go through it throughout the semester and not just kind of be thrown in by the school and say, see you in the fall, you know? I think this will be a really good place to talk about things and kind of reason through it. And it makes me feel more confident that if I am having trouble, that I have somebody's perspective of, that is a clinician and that is an instructor to say, hey, did you think about it this way? Or did you see it? Maybe you didn't see it from this perspective. From a clinician that takes students, this is kind of how I see it. And maybe that's where there was some sort of miscommunication or just something you didn't think about.
Right. So, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I feel less nervous, more excited.
Yeah. Somehow I feel less nervous too.
I love it.
I'm just taking note of like everything you said, mental note of everything you said. And I feel like it'll all work out.
Yeah.
It will.
Yeah.
It will. It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
I definitely had tears as I was a student on my first one. I don't think I did on my second one, but there were some tears there, you know? So like you go through changes, but I think this is going to be really, really cool to kind of highlight both of your experiences as we go through, you know, right now there's nerves, there's excitement. It's just kind of like, I don't know. Yeah. We're going to see what happens. And then really kind of being able to check in every so often and see how things are changing, new challenges, things that you're like, oh, I was nervous about that, but I don't care. I got that.
I'm a pro.
That's totally easy now. And then the other big thing too is this is helping you guys. This is helping me, but then also kind of opening it up to our listeners that are out there that could be going through something similar, or, you know, they're preparing to go on their first level one or level two, or even going into OT school and just kind of getting a highlight of what it's like.
Yep.
So hopefully this will have some good stuff for lots of people and we'll get some benefit out of it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to wrap it up with two questions for you guys. What does OT, what does occupational therapy mean to your life?
I have to think about that for a second.
For me, occupational therapy means like flexibility. It means hope. It means so many things to me.
I think that the biggest takeaway for me for occupational therapy, what does it mean to my life? I feel like it makes such a difference in other people's lives. And I feel like the ability to give people purpose through what they want to do is just the biggest thing and the most important thing. Because for me, it's who cares if you can do X, Y, and Z if you don't even want to do that in the first place? What's the point? So I think what it means to my life is being able to give other people that purpose that maybe other professions aren't necessarily focusing on and giving them that outlet to be able to do what they want to do, because ultimately it's their life and they should be able to do it.
And for me, occupational therapy really means, it really means like providing hope for people. I really think that I'm a people person and I love to see people happy. And I just am so excited to see kind of what the future holds for me and for the people that I treat. Yeah, I just think it means like love and hope and just all these great positive things.
Well, I love that. And so I think I already know what you guys are going to say, but if you could use one word to describe OT, what would it be?
I guess kind of to sum up from my answer, I would say one word to describe OT would be purpose.
I'm going
to
say joy.
All right. Well, thank you, Rochelle and Maya, for being here and being a part of the very first meeting that we're going to have. And I hope our listeners will get some really good insight, maybe some strategies, and just kind of get to know you guys a little bit better as you go throughout this adventure. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to further the discussion, go to our website, otforlife.com, and join our Facebook group. If you like us, here are three easy ways to let us know. One, share our podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. Two, leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere this podcast is found. Three, subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. Thanks again. We'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.